holding on Chof Aleph on the day.
About sort of the way down the almost by the dock. Mishnah said, yes, quote, tell him the follow that we have a case of a person who plows one furrow in a field, and he's hired for 8 lavim for it, because he said that there were a bunch of different lavim involved. There was it was
an ox and a donkey together, they were mukdashin, it was kilayim bekerim, etc. So in particular, one of the ones we mentioned was that it's kilayim bekerim. Now, kilayim bekerim, on the face of it,
is talking about the knowledge of plant, kilayim in a vineyard. You were talking about plowing, so what's the connection?
Omer Rabbi Yannai, so Rabbi Yannai said,
plow
kilayim? On the face of it, what does plowing have to do with planting kilayim? So Amar Rav Yannai, b'chavura, in the chavura, which the Rivan says means a day of an assembly of the chachamim, nimnu v'gamru, they voted and they decided on the following halacha, hachoyfa b'kilayim loike, somebody who covers up dirt, who puts dirt on top of kilayim that is growing, loike, he gets malchus.
That's midrabanan.
No, the malchus implies as daraisa. So they decided that included in the din daraisa of that you're not allowed to plant kilayim, it also includes not only planting the seeds in the first place, but also covering them with dirt after they're planted. Yeah. So wait, Omalahen Rabbi Yechanan. So Rabbi Yechanan says to them, or actually to him, to Rabbi Yannai, Lav Mishnah Seinu. He says, what do we need the Chavura to go and decide on this? Isn't that exactly what it says in our Mishnah? Yesh Chodesh Telem Echad, V'chayiv Olam Mishum Shmoyna Lav. And we said in our Mishnah that a person can be plowing one furrow and be chayiv on it for 8 lavim. We said a chodesh b'sher v'chamor, he's plowing with an ox and a donkey together, which is kilayim, v'en mukdashin, and the case is that the sher, and possibly the chamor also, are mukdashin, as we discussed yesterday. Wait, the kilayim b'kerim. And the third one was that kilayim b'kerim. That it's kilayim in a vineyard.
So that's chodesh.
That's the question. Hay chodesh to mechayiv mishum kilayim. So Rabbi Yechanan says, after all, how would you have a situation that somebody plows and he's chayiv for kilayim? Evidently, it must be talking about that you're covering over, in other words, there's kilayim in the, he's plowing a furrow, right over there, there's planted already kilayim, that somebody, that he or somebody else, has planted kilayim, and planted wheat and barley and what do you call it? Midaraisa, if they're anywhere within 6 tefachim of each other. No, actually what it is like this. The Gemara tells us, You have there's a difference between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. In Eretz Yisrael, you chayev, if you have them, I think, within 6 tefachim of each other. In Chutz La'aretz, you only chayev on Kalaya Kerem if you actually plant a wheat grain, a barley grain, and a grape pit all together. Because then what you have
is chayev 6.
You're not chayev. If you're within 6 tefachim and chutz, you wouldn't be chayev daraisa, right? So over here, evidently, what we're talking about is that there's kilayim planted there, and you, by your plowing, are covering that up with dirt. So therefore, the Mishnah already is implying that you're chayev malchus for that.
Not necessarily, because you can still plow without if you don't cover and you
but
plow.
What is the situation that the Mishnah tells us that you can be chayev for kilayim bekerim when you're plowing? What kind of plowing would involve kilayim bekerim? The only way it could be on the face of it is if you're plowing, by your plowing, you're covering up the seeds with dirt.
So then why the Mishnah didn't say that, covering?
But that's what it's clear, because the Mishnah is trying to find a way where a person is plowing and doing all these things. But the point is, in other words, Rabbi Yechanan is saying, the fact that the Mishnah mentions kilayim bekerim in connection with plowing, evidently we must be talking about that he's covering up the seeds with dirt.
He could cover up plowing, shoveling.
But the Mishnah had mentioned, if the Mishnah mentioned shoveling, it could mention, for example, that he used an ox and a donkey, because you don't use an ox and a donkey to shovel. The Mishnah is trying to find us an example where you have one thing that you're doing where there's many different isurim come in. So over here, if the Mishnah is mentioning that plowing can involve kalayakim, the only way on the face of it that can be is by covering them with dirt. Therefore, the Mishnah already is implying that covering them with dirt, you're chayiv malchus. Why did the Chavura need to vote on that and decide that? Amalei, so Rabbi Yannai says, you're right, that is what the Mishnah means, but ilav the delay lo chasva, if I had not picked up the piece of earthenware for you, mi mashkachas maganitza tusa, would you have found the pearl underneath it? In other words, by me mentioning to you what the Chavura decided on this, that helped you realize that indeed is what the Mishnah is implying. As opposed to, if you hadn't been for that, you could have understood our Mishnah according to a different opinion, according to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, which the halacha is not necessarily like that.
Okay.
By the way, there's a Tosfos elsewhere. There's this expression about Chaska and Maganissa. It's also brought in the first Perek of Bava Metzia. Tosfos asks over there, what kind of figure of speech of that? Is it usual to pick up a shard of earthenware and find a pearl underneath it? The Tosfos says actually the shards that we're talking about over here are like the flat rocks or maybe like the shells that you find at the bottom of the ocean, which resemble, they resemble earthenware a little bit, and you pick one of them up, and yeah, you find a pearl underneath it. So that's where the figure of speech comes from. Amalei Rishlokish Lo Gefenon. So now Rishlokish later on tells Lo Gefenon, he loved Kilsach Gavre Rabba, were it not for the fact that a great man, meaning Rav Yanai, praised your understanding where you said, isn't our Mishnah implying what the Chavura said? And he said, you're right. If it hadn't been for that, I would have said, Havamina, I would explain the Mishnah, I would think to explain the Mishnah differently. Masdis in Mani Rav Akiva. You could have said instead that our Mishnah maybe goes only according to Rav Akiva. Namely, that Rabbi Akiva holds that if you cause Mekayim literally means that you make them exist. There's two different understandings among the Mefarshim. Does Mekayim mean that you just leave them be, that you see Kilayim growing over there and you leave them be, or does it actually mean that you do something to promote their growth?
Covering
promotes their growth. Of course it does. If they're left exposed over there, they're not going to grow as well. If they're covered up with dirt, then so in other words, according to that, only a
point. Then planted to grow.
Come on, you've never planted anything before. You have to be covered with dirt in order that the birds don't eat it or whatever. Sun is once it starts sprouting above ground, then yeah, of course you don't cover it with dirt. Then it needs the sun. But to begin with, when it's first germinating, it needs to be in the dirt. It grows better that way. Okay. So then Rabbi Akiva holds Hamakayim Tilayim Leike. So you could have argued that our Mishnah goes like Rabbi Akiva. My Rabbi Akiva, where do we see the statement of Rabbi Akiva? The Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, Hamanakish Vamachapa B'Kilayim. If somebody pulls weeds, that's Manakish, it pulls weeds, Vamachapa, or he covers up the Kilayim with dirt, Leike, he gets Malkus. Rabbi Akiva, Hamakayim. Rabbi Akiva says also somebody who's Makayim. So actually, the Rivon explains that actually this isn't two different opinions in this Braisa. The Gemara explains in Moed Katan, at least this is how Rish Lakish explains it over there, that it's actually one long statement of Rabbi Akiva. Why is Hamanakish Ramachapa the Kalayim Loika? Because you get Malkus also from the Kayim, for anything that promotes the growth of Kalayim. So therefore, so covering them up with dirt is an example of that. So
why would you say this Rabbi Akiva?
So Rabbi Akiva, Hamanakish Ramachapa the Kalayim. Oh, and he says, why is that? Because Afamakayim, not only if you plant Kilayim yourself, not only if you actually plant the seeds in the ground, but also if you do anything to promote their growth. And the point is, therefore, so we could have said that, we could have said, Rish Lakish argues that not necessarily is our Mishnah teaching us that everybody would agree that Mechapa is Loika. Maybe our Mishnah is only according to Rabbi Akiva. My time is Rabbi Akiva. So what is Rabbi Akiva's reason? Where did he get this idea that a Mekayim is Chayav Malkus? The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says, Sodcho le Sizra Kilayim, the Pasuk says, your field, you should not plant the Kilayim. Eimi el Zireya. From that Pasuk, you would only know if you actually plant it. Mekayim Minayin. How do we know if you do anything else, if you keep them there, or if you do anything to promote their growth or whatever? How do we know? Tamad Loima, therefore, you have the beginning of the pasuk says, Behem dechalei sabia kilayim, sod chalei sizra kilayim. The reason why it's in parenthesis is that even though that's the way it says in the pasuk, the Gemara is only darshan in the part that's outside parenthesis. The pasuk says like this, Behem dechalei sabia kilayim, your animals you should not crossbreed kilayim. Sod chalei sizra kilayim, your field you should not plant kilayim. The fact that it says kilayim at the end of the part about behem decha, whereas it could have said like this, it could have said behem decha kilayim lo sabia, and then sadcha lo sizra kilayim, where the word kilayim would not be next to the word sadcha. Instead, it said like that, hemdecha lo sabia kilayim. No, it's not extra. Each one is a different kind of kilayim. But the point is the fact that it said kilayim at the end of the part about the hemdecha, adjacent to the part about sada, allows us to darshan it as if it said kilayim sadcha lo. Your field shall not be kilayim. Which means not just you planted it yourself, but you're allowing it to be there. You're promoting its growth. Then you're also high of the same malchus. Otherwise, again, if the pasuk didn't mean to imply that, it would have said behem dechal kilayim lo sabia, sadcha lo sizra kilayim, or it could have said behem dechal lo sabia kilayim lo sizra sadcha kilayim, whatever. The fact that it says kilayim next to sada allows us to darshan it this way. That kilayim, as long as there's kilayim in your field, you're chayim. And that's how Rabbi Akiva is. Okay. So according to that, then there would be, so according to Rabbi Akiva, you have a lav of Kilayakarim, but that lav can be transgressed in one of two ways. Either you actually plant it, or you do anything to promote its growth.
And if you do both, you're too loving?
According to Rabbi Akiva, no, not necessarily, because it's all from the same pocket. No, he might well say you only get one malchus.
If you plant it, and then a day later you cut
it. If it's different asteroids, then you're going to get different malchus anyway. If it's different asteroids, you could eat the same chaylev a bunch of times, and different asteroids, you're going to end up
with
malchus for each one. Same asteroid, maybe Rabbi Akiva would say you only get one malchus. I don't know. Okay. So Ullah says to Rav Nachman, on that basis, if we're saying over here that this person with his plowing is also covering up seeds of Kilayim and thereby promoting their growth, that amounts to a tolda of the malacha of Zerea, of planting. This is, we're talking about on Yom Tov, because the Mishnah had said that one of the counts on which we get him is that it's Yom Tov. So in that case, why are we saying that he only gets 7 malchus, he should get an 8th one? Why did he get 8? He should get 9. The Loki Nami from Zerei B'Yom Tov. He should get Malchus also because he was planting on Yom Tov, not just plowing, but also planting. Omalei, so Rav Nachman answers, okay, Tana B'Shai, you're fine. The Tana mentioned some things and he left out others. Omalei Ola says, how does that work? Tana Katani Shmoina, the Tana Katani Shmoina, the Tana specifically mentioned 8, no more than that. Ba'adam Tana B'Shai, you want to say that he left things out? You would still expect that. He should have mentioned this 9th one. He's trying to find as many as possible that are going to be in this scenario.
Obviously, Yom Tov.
We said Yom Tov according to Nosu Beis Atoma. So once we're mentioning Yom Tov, why isn't he getting Malchus for 2 counts of Yom Tov, one for plowing and one for planting? Mela, if you say that he wasn't choy for the Kilayim, then fine. But you said that he's choy for the Kilayim. You said that he's getting Malchus on those grounds. Well, then he should also get Malchus for planting on Yom Tov. Yeah. Omar Rava. So Rava answers. It's like this: Yesh chiluk malachas v'Shabbos ve'ein chiluk malachas v'Yom Tov. There is a separation of malachas on Shabbos, but not on Yom Tov. Meaning, on Shabbos, a person does different malachas on Shabbos. He'll be chayev a chatas individually for each one. If he did it for Shogeg, if he did it for Mezid, obviously you get skila. You only get one skila. But not on Yom Tov. If a person does many malachas behelam echad on Yom Tov, then he will that were behelam not really behelam echad because on Yom Tov you don't bring a chatas for it. If he does it, for example, with one hasra on Yom Tov, then he would only get one malach. There's no chiluk malachas as far as Yom Tov. Why is that? The Rivan says like this. Because where do we get the concept of chiluk malachas to Shabbos? We've learned before in Sanhedrin, it goes all the way back to Shabbos, that we have, when the Torah tells us you're not allowed to do malacha on Shabbos generically, then it says specifically, like, Tivaru Esh Chomesh Vesech, you're not allowed to make a fire in your dwellings on Shabbos. So we learn from that, L'chalik Yotos, that it comes to teach us that just as Havara is singled out, so each malacha is singled out. And therefore, if you do them individually, then you chayiv individual chatois for each one.
Yeah.
So on Yom Tov, there's no such thing. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say that Tavar Eish on Yom Tov. Therefore, there's no source to say that there's a separation of malachas on Yom Tov.
And therefore, that's it.
So it's all considered. If you do all 39 malachas on Yom Tov, not really all 39, whatever you do, whichever ones are relevant on Yom Tov, then you're not going to get 39 malachas. You're only going to get one.
Beautiful.
Yes. Omalei, so Ola says, Adata, hey, good, that's how it should be. Yes, that's the correct answer. However, Eisve Abaya, however Abaya asks him, Ein Chiluk Malachas on Yom Tov. You're telling me that there's no Chiluk Malachas on Yom Tov, that even if you do a bunch of Malachas on Yom Tov, you're only going to be Chai of one Malchus? Well, it's not, but we learn in a Mishnah, it's actually called Tanya, we learn in a Brasa. Hamavashal did B'chol of the Yom Tov, Gidanosha, that is, if someone, Hagoy Sabach adds the word Hanosha, if a person cooks the Gidanosha, B'chol of, in milk, the Yom Tov, the Ochloy, that's what we're going to see, there's going to be 5 of it, it's going to eat it. Loika Chomish, he gets 5 Malchus. Loika Mishim Oichel Gid, number one, because he ate the Gidanosha, which we said in this week's parasha, that you're not allowed to. The loika mishum of ashal v'yom tov shalei l'tzarif. Number two, he gets malchus because he cooked on yom tov unnecessarily. Which now that one's not so simple actually.
Hold on.
Okay, you have like this. This Shammai holds that when you have malachas on mutter on yom tov, they're only mutter for oichel nefesh. You're not allowed to do the same malacha for other purposes. For example, let's say carrying on yom tov. This Shammai holds you're allowed to carry food on Yom Tov from one place to another. They would hold, for example, you're not allowed to carry a sefer or a baby or whatever because that's not l'tzorech Yom Tov. It's not l'tzorech achila. The halacha is like v'tilol, that mitoich shehutra l'tzorech. Once a malacha is mutter for the needs of Yom Tov, hutra nami shaloi l'tzorech, it is also mutter even if you're doing it not for the sake of oichel nefesh. So then, by that logic, v'tilol, the halacha wouldn't necessarily be like this v'raisa because Petillo might hold that yes, it's true. You're cooking a gidan nosha, which you're not allowed to eat. However, cooking in and of itself on Yom Tov is not a malacha, which is also, and therefore the fact that you're cooking something that's also wouldn't make it a chiyuv malchus. But according to Beit Shammai, yeah, you would get mevashel b'yom tov.
Any melacha, in other words, would be allowed that what? For the tzarech yom tov?
Not tzarech yom tov, but tzarech achila, tzarech eichel nefesh. Once it's mutter for tzarech eichel nefesh, now you have, there are rules on that. For example, you have various melachas that, since they could be done just as well before yom tov, and there's no loss of taste or what have you, or quality, then the Chachamim asked you to do it on yom tov because you could have just as well done it before yom tov. That's midrabanan. Midraraisa, any malacha that's directly needed for Eichel Nefesh is allowed on yom tov, and the Tilul hold mitoch shahutu l'tzara, chutu nami shalol l'tzara. For example, again, according to the Tilul, you'd be allowed to carry a sefer on yom tov from one place outside, because once I saw it, mutter for tzara hachila for eating, then it's also mutter shalol l'tzara. As long as there's some need on yom tov for it.
Oh, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Right.
Fine.
There's some need for on yom tov.
Okay.
So a talis would be allowed,
yeah.
But a hammer you would not, obviously.
A hammer is mukta, that's a different thing, but yeah. Okay. All right. So that's the loika mishum of asher did b'cholov. Number three, he gets malchus for cooking the gid anasha in milk, which this also is not necessarily according to halacha, because it is true, of course, you're not allowed to cook basa b'cholov, that's daraisa, but does that apply to the gid anasha? There was machloikas in Chulin and a few other places in Shas, whether yesh begidin benoisim tam or ein begidin benoisim tam. Does the gid, I'm not sure, or any gid for that matter, any sinew in the body, does it have a flavor? So when it comes to eating it, fine. The Torah specifically says, l'yoich l'meneisio l'gid anasha. So it doesn't matter whether we consider that it has flavor or not. Either way, it's awesome. But to say that it should be also under the rule of basa b'cholov, that not necessarily. If we say ein begidin benoisim tam, we would say that it's considered like nothing more than a piece of wood. It wouldn't be considered
a basa.
So la halacha, we say la halacha ain't begidin b'nois and tam. La halacha is that gidin are not considered to have a flavor.
Mm-hmm.
That has implications in many. That has that therefore it's not bosser. So in particular, if a person were to cook it with milk, he wouldn't be chayev for lois of asher b'di b'chalevim. But our braisa holds according to the opinion that it does. The loikim is from oichol bosser b'chalav. He'd also get malchus for eating bosser b'chalav. Again, same thing. If we say yesh begidin b'nois and tam, the loikim is from havara. And number five, he gets malchus for having made a fire. Which again was if we don't say chutu l'tzer or chutu nami shalol l'tzer, he made a fire to cook it. So that's fine. Which in other words, the Rivan spells out. Let's say for example, he had made the fire and somebody else had cooked. Both of them would be chayev because they're both ovos malachas, and neither one is. Each one is only mutter on yom tov l'tzer achila, and this is not tzer achila. Now, the im isa. So if you're going to tell me that. Ein chiluk malachas b'yomtiv, that you, no matter how many malachas you do on yomtiv, you only get one malchus. Mishum havara le'mechayiv, and you shouldn't be chayiv an extra malchus for havara. Zohi chayiv le'mishum b'shulei, because you already mechayiv him for breaking yomtiv by cooking. How can you mechayiv him again for lighting the fire? The answer is you're right. After havara, you have to subtract from this b'raisa havara. V'ayu gidan nosha shal nevela. You have to put in instead that the case is this gidan nosha came from a nevela. So now when he eats it, he's chayav. So now the five things, so you have four things that are listed in the Braisa, but the fifth one is not that he lit a fire on Yom Tov, because it's true, no matter how many malachas he does on Yom Tov, he's only getting everyone malachas. The fifth one is because it was nevela, and Torah says, you know, I'll eat nevela. Okay, there
so
was a,
it still wouldn't be
so it's still five. So you still have, but there's only one malachas you're getting for breaking Yom Tov. The other four will have to do with other factors. So therefore, that would work. It would still work with Rava's explanation that about chiluk malachas for Shabbos and not the yom. Okay, there is, by the way, a good deal of discussion among the Meforshim over here about the details of what isurim can be chal on top of other ones. You have a concept that's a concept in a number of places in Shas. Actually, the Gemara is going to touch on it at the end of our Gemara over here before the next Mishnah. You have something called isur kolo, and you have something called isur moisi.
Isur kolo is, for example, the Rivan explained further on the Amud, that isur kolo is with other included in the same isur, and he gives an example. Let's say, for example, a man has his mother-in-law
who's offered to him, and he marries her sister. Fine, her sister is mother to him. So now, though, what happens is now there's an extra sister that is added to his that's added to his mother-in-law. If he were to now be Mizanov with his mother-in-law, he would be chayav on two counts: one that he's his mother-in-law, and one that he's his wife's sister. We don't say that any sister halal iser because we say before all of their various other sisters would have been mutter. So his mother-in-law Leah, for example, was also came before being his mother-in-law. But Rachel and Bila and Zilpah and any other sisters they had would have been mutter. Now when of Leah. Of the mother-in-law. Now, when he marries Rachel, one of those sisters, all the other sisters become also to him. So once they become also, then the Isser also goes on the mother-in-law as well. That's called Isser Kolel. Isser Moisif would be that you have, Isser Moisif would be that there's a stronger Isser on the original Isser. And he gives an example. Let's say, for example, you have an Eshetish, who a woman who previously was married, and then she becomes his mother-in-law. But now there becomes an extra strong thing. As an Eshetish, the punishment would have been chenek. Now, as his mother-in-law, the punishment becomes skila. It's stronger than chenek. So that's Isser Moisif versus Isser Kolel. So they discuss it at some length over here, how this would fit over here, how is the Gid Anasha becoming any more also as being the Bela, for example. Okay, so one idea of it is indeed that before only the Gid Anasha was also the rest of the meat of the animal would have been butter had it not been in the Bela. Now that it's in the Bela, everything is also. Okay, anyway.
So it's an Isser.
So it would be, according to that, it would be an Isser Kolel. It would be an Isser Kolel that you're including the rest of the meat that previously would have been butter now becomes also because it's in the Bela, and so the Gid Anasha also gains that Isser as well. So therefore, you could say you give a Malkus for a big Gid Anasha in the Bela. Okay, the problem with that is, well, Tani Rapriya, but didn't Rapriya teach a Braita, Loika Shtayim Alachilosa, the Shalosh Shal Bishulai. To summarize, what are the five malchus we get? Two of them have to do with the Isurim of eating, three of them have to do with the Isurim of cooking. Let's look back at the Braita. The original version of the Braita
we said that he got malchus for eating the Gid Anasha, so that's one of eating. Mm-hmm. Another one for cooking on Yom Tov, so that's one of cooking. Mm-hmm. One for cooking the Gid in the Cholov, in milk, that's another one for cooking. Oichel b'asa b'cholov is eating, that's another one for eating, and havara and making a fire, that was another one having to do with the cooking. And Rav Chiya summarizes, that's how it is, three for cooking and two for eating.
The key is that if you're going to replace havara,
you're going to say that instead of it, gid anasha shal nevela, shalosh achalasa uchayim, then you have it the other way around. It's three having to do with eating, one that it's gid anasha, two that it's eaten with milk, and three that it's from a nevela. And the other two would have to do with the cooking. That goes against what Rav Chiya is summarizing the braisa. Ella apik havara v'ayel asa asherah. No, rather you have to say take out havara because indeed chiluk malachos v'yamtiv. When it comes to yamtiv, no matter how many malachos you do, you're still only going to be chayav one malchus. But instead, we're going to put in v'ayel asa asherah. Instead, we're going to talk about that for the cooking you use wood from an asherah tree, which va'azhara semalcha v'layidvach v'yadcha v'gemer. The azhara, the warning in the Torah not to do that, is that it says that none of the banned thing, meaning anything having to do with Avodah Zarah, should be in your possession. So like this, you shouldn't have Hanah from it, in other words. Like this, you had wood from an Asherah tree. You had Hanah from it by cooking with it. Therefore, you get Malchus for that. Okay. If you're going to go like that, then you should say, in that case, then you have also another lab that applies to having Hanah from things of Avodah Zarah. Don't bring the disgusting thing into your house. So then you should say you get six malchus.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, six, that means...
So then you should have the four...
On every one of them?
No, it means, in other words, that this wood of the Asherah, there'll be two malchus There'll be two malchus for using it, one from V'layid Rakhviyadcha, and one from Lai Savi Tehav Abesecha. The Rambam, by the way, who holds that you don't get extra malchus just because the Torah repeats an Isser, he might have to explain that the Asi Asherah over here, maybe let's say, would be wood from an Asherah that was in an Irani Dacha. So you have two different factors, one that it's from an Irani Dacha and one that's from Avodah Zarah.
If it's a wood that's from an Irani Dacha,
so that's V'lo Yidrach B'yad Chamom and Acherah. We learned at the end of Sanhedrin that everything from the Irani Dacha is also Banah. Because again, the Rambam holds that just because the Torah repeats an Isser multiple times doesn't make that there's extra malchus for it. Only if you have more categories, so you have more categories that would be in it. Okay, whatever. Ella, no, my skin can traditionally about say hektish. No, rather you can answer, not that it's talking about that it was wood from an asherah, but rather it was wood from hektish. The warning in the Torah not to do that is as follows. It says, asherah emtisukun ba'ish. It says that you should burn the asherah for the asherah trees in fire. And the next passage continues, le'sasim kein l'Hashem alekechem. Don't do that kind of thing to Hashem. Meaning from there we learn an iser to destroy anything of hektish. From there we also learn that you're not know, allowed to erase Hashem's name and so forth. So like this, if he does that, if he's destroying something of hektish, then he would get malchus on those grounds. Tosfos points
out inside that because he used the asherah, the wood, to cook, he destroyed.
No. So this isn't an asherah. This is, we changed that. We said not an asherah. Now we're talking about that he used wood of hektish. That's awesome. In fact, Tosfos points out on the face of it, he should also be chayav from me'ila. The answer is that me'ila would only apply if he used a shava krutta as wood. Here he might conceivably have used less than a shava krutta of wood.
How much
I don't know. I don't know, whatever it is, it could have been a very small amount. Okay. Fine.
Okay. So now the Gemara is now Simon Shanbai Shanaz. Now we're going to have a number of questions. These are the initials of Amaroyim who are going to point out questions that they're going to ask about different Isurim that should have been listed. What do we mean should have been listed? You have three different explanations. One is that it means should have been listed in our Mishnah, when it gave the example over here of somebody plowing one furrow and being chayav for eight labim, the Gemara is going to ask, we're going to have many different Amaroyim ask why the Mishnah, if as long as the Mishnah is trying to add many different cases, of many different possibilities that he gets malchus, why couldn't it have added more details to the scenario where he would be chayav more malchus? That's one explanation of these following questions. We're going to have a bunch of them. Another explanation is that it's referring back to the beginning of our Perek, when the Mishnah started listing, and then the last few Mishnayot, it listed different Isurim, it listed different individual Lavim, for which a person is Chayav Malchus. We have in the first Mishnah ones that are the eating Chametz on Pesach, and having relations with certain relatives, and tattooing, and shaving, and whatever. So why didn't the Mishnayot list these next few ones that we're going to list also, which in each of them there'd be a Chiddush, because we might not know otherwise that they're also. That's another explanation. And then the Chofetz Chaim gives an explanation in a Sefer L'Kotei Halachos. He says the question is on the first part of our Mishnah. We said it at the beginning of our Mishnah. We brought a number of scenarios where a person can be doing the same issue repeatedly and get repeated malchus for it. For example, we said a Nazir is drinking wine and they keep on telling him, don't drink. Every Revius he gets malchus for. Here we're going to bring a bunch of things where conceivably a person could be doing the same thing over and over and he gets malchus for each one. Why didn't the Mishnah list those cases also? Maskifar of Hoshia, so number one of Hoshia asked the question, the Lech Shav Nami has a Rea B'Nachalaisan, why didn't we also
leave the...
So again, we have the three different possibilities what he's asking on. Is he asking why in the scenario of our Mishnah of the Chodesh Telem Echad, didn't we list this one as well? That the case is that the Foro was also in a Nachalaisan, in the place where an Eglar Rufa was killed, where there's an Isser to work such land.
Right.
Or you can say the question is, why didn't the Mishnayos in general list that, why didn't the Mishnayos in our Perek list that that's also a case where a person is Chayav Malchus? Or why didn't the Mishnah list that that's an example where suppose a person goes into this Nachal Eisen and starts plowing or planting or whatever, and he does it repeatedly, and they keep on warning him, don't plow, don't plant, or whatever, and he keeps on doing it, that he should be Chayav Malchus for each one individually.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I should have reminded you.
Yeah. So the lecture of Nami as a Rebbe Nachal Eisan, why didn't it also list the case of somebody who plants in the Nachal Eisan in this
again,
hard valley,
which
is where they did the Eglar Rufa. Nachal Eisan means Eisan means strong or hard. So most of the Mepharshim understand that it means it's hard ground. The Rambam holds that Nachal Eisan means it's a strong flowing river, and then you kill the Eglar Rufa on the riverbank.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. You have a warning in the Torah that you're not allowed to work such land. You're not allowed to work such land or plant there. Why? I mean, it's a custom. But the one idea that the Gemara says over there, because like this, you had the victim over there was not able to make payrus. He wasn't left alive to be able to eventually have children and to make his mark on the world. So therefore, we take an animal that didn't make payrus, that it's an egla, it's a young calf that hasn't yet had children, and you kill it in a place that's never going to produce payrus. To represent the fact that it's like
such a bank, is there any Paris that can grow?
So if it's hard ground, then it means it's hard, it's poor quality soil.
So harder next to enough.
So that Amman would understand that it means that the river itself is fast flowing, and yeah, the bank next day it would be infertile land or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so there you have another example of Malchus. add a second one, Machsikorabhanan. You have a lech of Nam Yamochik Hashem Balichon. So why don't we also give an example where the person is erasing Hashem's name as he's going? So again, if we're talking about the case of our Mishnah of the Yesh Chodesh Talamachos, you could assume that, for example, the name of Hashem written on the ground or on a piece of something on the ground or whatever, and as he's plowing, he tears through it. According to the other explanations, it means that without reference to that, where a person is repeatedly erased the name, they keep on warning him he should get extra malchus. Well, why didn't the Mishnah? Why didn't the Mishnah? It's in our parish list that is something that a person can get malchus for. And the warning is, because again, the Torah says, the Torah says you should destroy the names of the idols, but don't do like that to Hashem. Number three, Rav Abohu asks, the lecture of Nami Akotis at Baharjoy, why don't we also list the example where somebody is cutting off a Baharis, somebody is cutting off a Simon of Saras. So again, with the plowing, it would mean that, let's say, for example, he has a Saras in his finger or whatever, and he puts his finger next to the plow and cuts it off as he's going. Why would he do that? Because he wants to get rid of the Saras. He didn't want to be coming. The warning is from the following Pasuki, Shama b'nega Saras. Be careful with the Nega Saras, which is a lois that in Simone Saras. So that includes cutting off the beheret, it includes cutting off the white hairs that are in it, for example. It includes anything where you have something would otherwise be Tomei Saras, and you're somehow manipulating it to make it look like it's not.
You're not allowed to burn them?
Or discolor them or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Mask for Abaya, number four. What are we up to? Number four. Abaya asks, V'lechshav nami ha-meziach ha-chod v'ha-meseh ba-de oren. Why don't we list also, here's two other things that a person could be doing a lot. He could be disconnecting the choshen from the ephod, and he could be removing the poles of the oren. V'azarosim ha-chod, and the warning for these two things is the Torah says, lo yasuru, by the badim of the oren, the pasuk says, lo yasuru, they shall not be removed. And by the choshen, it says, the choshen shall not be disconnected from the ephod, which we understand. Now, the Gemara discusses in Yuma that actually you could understand these as statements of fact, that the badim have to be placed in the aron in such a way that they won't be removed, and the choshen has to be attached to the ephod in such a way that it won't move back and forth. But the Gemara explains in Yuma that actually, at least according to one opinion, and that's the halacha, that these two things are actually sort of. A person takes out the badim from the aron, he will get malchus. Unnecessarily, he will get malchus. A person disconnects the choshen from the ephod, from the cables, whatever, that hold them together, he'll get malchus. So here you can own anybody. So here you could all see scenarios. And again, if we're talking in the scenario where he's plowing, some of Koshim explained, I think the Ritva talks about, let's say, for example, the Mishnah could have added, the Kohen Gadol is standing right there, the guy is plowing, and as he's plowing, he bumps into the Kohen Gadol and disconnects the Koshim from the apron. Or as far as the poles of the Aron, he says even more. What we could be talking about, suppose we talk about that the person actually takes out the poles from the Aron and goes and uses them for his plowing. He goes and uses them as tools for his plowing. And as long as he doesn't put them back, he's over on the lot.
So he did get a lot because he took them out and he used them?
Maybe he'd also get Malchus for Meila. We're not getting into that. But the point is that at least he'd get Malchus for taking them out of the Aron. Yeah.
Who would do that?
Okay. Next, Rav Ashi asks, why don't we also list the case where the person is plowing using wood from an Asherah? And we said earlier on the Amud that the issue for that is that none of the banned substance should be in your possession. You shouldn't have anah from it. So like this, he's using wood of an Asherah in his plow, then he's over on that. And Ravina asked one more. Why don't we also count that while he's plowing, he also cuts down good fruit-bearing trees? And the warning is, the pasuk says, from such a tree you can eat, therefore you should not cut it down. So you have many things that could have been listed. So according to the explanation, which is, by the way, how the Rivan and Tosfos learned the question, that the question is on our Mishnah, when it said, Yesh Chodesh Telem Echad, where he said, maximum person can be chayv 8 chatois, why don't we say, not 8 chatois, sorry, 8 malchus, why don't we say we have 7 more things, a person could be chayv 15 malchus. So Tosfos says, in that case, fine, but the Gemara has left all these without an answer. Why is that? Tosfos said, the answer is because we said before Tana V'Shaya, we said before the Tana doesn't necessarily have to list everything, he can leave things out. Now, one second. So Ula had asked on that. He said the Mishnah had said Shmoina. How can he say Tana V'Shaya? The difference is the Mishnah had mentioned Yom Tov. The question, the premise of the question was before, as long as the Mishnah is mentioning that he's over, that he violated Yom Tov, and therefore he gets Malkus, the Mishnah should have said that he gets two Malkus on Yom Tov, one for plowing, one for planting. And that brought us to the answer of a Chiluk Malkus. That the Mishnah can also add different other things to its scenario, that no big deal. The Mishnah didn't have to add all of these other possibilities to its scenario.
We would have done it in any case.
We would know them from their respective circuit, right? That's how Tosfos answers. There's also the Orach HaNer says that actually now the Gemara is going to mention an eighth one, and the Gemara is going to answer that. Why is that? Because one thing, the Mishnah had mentioned eight things. To say that there are seven more that it didn't list, fine, ton of a shy. But to say that the Mishnah listed eight, and there's another eight that we could have listed, that already becomes problematic. So therefore, the Gemara is going to have to find an answer for the eighth one, which we're going to bring now. According to the other explanations, the first seven questions that we had were all not in reference to the last part of our Mishnah, but rather independent of that. So therefore, no problem. Those the Gemara, fine, okay, the Mishnah didn't bother listing every possible thing.
This one we're going to find an answer.
This one is definitely on the case of Chorish, on the plowing of our Mishnah. So, Amalei Rav Ze'er L'Ramani, the Lechshev Nami, why doesn't the Mishnah list also a ninth one, going to Amal Shvor Shalai Echrish B'Yom Tov, where a person says, I swear that I won't plow on Yom Tov, and now he plows, and therefore he's breaking his Shvor. The answer is Hasam like a Chol Shvor, because in that case, the Shvor wouldn't be Chal in the first place. Mushba V'Omen Me'Har Sinai, because the person is already under an oath from Har Sinai
not to do it,
and therefore one shavua cannot come on top of another shavua. We will learn that actually in a few days. We're going to be beginning the Sefer Shavuos, and we will learn that topic.
That is Shavuosha. That's what we call Shavuosha.
It is. It'll be an example Shavuosha. Yeah. But no, I don't think it'll be a Shavuosha per se, because then we'd say you get Malchus for that alone. But no, the point is, it's such a Shavuosha is not Chal in the first place.
He's not going to put on Tefillin or something.
That's another example. Yeah. However, Amalei, but Rav Ze'era says, still, you're going to Amal Shavuosha La'echosh Bein Bechol Bein Yom Tov. How about that? You could have the scenario, the person said, I'm not going to plow on weekdays or on Yom Tov. Demigo Decholah Alei Shavuosha Bechol. Once the Isser already exists on Chol Alei Namim B'Yom Tov, then it can also exist on Yom Tov. And here is where the Rivan brings in the whole concept of Isser Kolol and Isser Moitzi. Again, here you would have, for example, that this would be an example of Isser Kolol.
It still could,
but it could. Once it applies to the weekdays, once you have the Shavua makes it, before he would have been mutter to plow on weekdays, now because of the Shavua he's not, it can also include Yom Tov. He said, I won't plow at all, not on weekdays and not on Yom Tov. So that such a thing could work. The answer is immediately.
So if it says that one way turn on Kol and on Yom Tov, that would apply.
It might. Yeah. Because it would work on Yom Tov, because on Yom Tov he's not much for volume and not the way it's filling, and therefore it could be Kol on non-weekdays as well. Yeah. Well, we'll learn about it in Shavuos. The answer is immediately. It's a B'Sheila like a ton. Yes. The difference is our Mishnah does not list things that are subject to being revoked. Meaning a Shavua, you can always go to Beis Din and be Matan Neder. So therefore, the Mishnah can't say as a definitive thing, you swore not to plow, and therefore that now you're going to be Chayav for the plowing, not necessarily, because you could always go to a Chacham and be Matan Neder, and then you're not going to get Malkus for that plowing. Mm. Whereas all the things we mentioned in our Mishnah, that it was a Shur and Chamur and Mukdashin and Talayim and Kerem and all, none of those have to do with Neder. So the question is, why not? Bare Beloy? What do you mean not? Bare Hektish? Our Mishnah said behind
Mukdashin.
The lawyer, you're telling me that not that our Mishnah doesn't list anything that is subject to She'ela, that you could get revoked. What about the Harei Hektish? Our Mishnah mentioned behind Mukdashin, the Shur and the Chamor of Mukdashin. Hektish is one of those things that you can be matinated for. So why is the Mishnah mentioning it? The answer is, the Bechur. When our Mishnah says behind Mukdashin, it's talking about a Bechur. A bechur is not there's no neder involved. There's no neder or shvur involved. It becomes a bechur as it's born.
So it's hektish already.
So it's hektish already. In other words, yes. So that's not the kind of hektish that you could do she'ela on.
That's the point.
And the Rivan, and again, the Rivan had mentioned on the Mishnah that the chamur of our Mishnah evidently is a bechur as well. That's the hektish chamur, and this would go according to Yehuda, who says that's also the hanah before you redeem it. Tosfos discusses that not necessarily that maybe the Hein Mukdashin primarily refers to the Shur. The Chamur could even be a Chamur of Cholin. You get Malkus for Shur of a Chamur because you're using Kalai and you're using two different animals to pull a plow.
So you're using both, and
no, so in other words, the issue would be, number one, that you're using a shor v'chamor, which the Torah tells us, like, sacrifice for shor v'chamor yachzav, you know, with a plow, with an ox and a donkey together. Number two, v'hein mukdashin doesn't mean that both of them are, it could be, one of them, specifically the shor, is mukdash, as we're saying over here, it's a b'chor. The chamor may or may not be. Okay, v'hare nazir, what about our Mishnah mentioned one of the eight things is a nazir. A nazir, you could be matzah neder. The answer is v'nazir shimshin. The answer is, we're talking about over here a special kind, the nazir shimshin that we learned back in nazir, which that, there's no shayla. So the Rivam says over here, a nazir shimshin is specifically talking about that he accepted the nazirus through a malach, that a malach commanded him to become a nazir. So then there's no shayla on it, which is how it was by Shimshin, where malach came before he was born and told his parents that he's going to be a nazir from the womb. Aside from Shimshin. So we look here that a person is able to take on such a nazirus. But
saying that it's a malach.
Saying that, not through a malach. No. So the Yvonne's explanation that it's through a malach, did that happen historically? I don't know, but it could happen. Many of the other Rishonim say that's not what it means. It means, a Nazir Shimshin just means that the person says, I'm taking on myself a Nazirus, like the Nazirus of Shimshin, even though it's not commanded on me by a malach. But they hold, and this is Taka the Halacha, Nazirus Shimshin, unlike regular Nazirus, there's no She'eva on it. A person says, I'm going to be a Nazir Shimshin, he can never get it revoked by Beis Din. It's interesting, by the way, in Ataras Nedarim, in the Nusach of Ataras Nedarim, that we say Erev Rosh Hashanah, our Nusach just mentions generically all Nedarim and all Shavuos and whatever. In the Veldish and Nusach mentions also Nazirus, and there are versions of it that say Vafilu Nazirus Shimshin. And that's they have a problem with that, because how can you say that? The Nazirus Shimshin can't be revoked. So therefore, they say that you should take that out.
Maybe that's only the
time of the Chumrah. No. A person makes Nazirus nowadays, they're also a Nazir. This means that they can't bring their korban. Okay. Fine. The question is, Nazir Shimshin bayu tamur l'meisim? Who? Is a Nazir Shimshin have a problem with becoming tamur l'mes? We learned in Nazir that actually, we learned from the career of Shimshin himself, that a Nazir Shimshin is never allowed to cut his hair. He's never allowed to drink wine or grapes or what have you, but he is allowed to become tamur l'mes, as we see over there that Shimshin killed Plishtim.
Right.
So therefore, if the Nazir of our Mishnah is a Nazir Shimshin, what's the problem with him being in a basic verse? He's allowed to be.
Yeah.
Now, Ella, hi Tana Isu Kola Lesley. You must answer
there. Why would the case be in a
that's what we said in the Mishnah. What are the eight malchus that he gets? If two of them are because he's a Kohen and a Nazir in a basic Akbar. A Kohen is not allowed to become Tommy, and a Nazir is not allowed to become Tommy. But if he's a Nazir Shimshin, sure, he's allowed to become Tommy. And if he's not a Nazir Shimshin, then yes, Nebisha Ela, you're able to revoke it, and all Mishnah, yes, either one or the other. Now, Ella, hi Tana Isu Kola Lesley. No, you have to answer, therefore, our the Tana of our Mishnah evidently does not hold of the concept of Isur Kolo. He does not hold that if you were to make a Shavua that I won't plow ever, that it should be Chal on Yom Tov. Once it's Chal on weekdays, it's also Chal on Yom Tov. He doesn't hold of that concept. So therefore, you can't say. So therefore, you can't add that he made such a Shavua, because according to the Tanakh, the halacha is that it would work. The halacha is it does work. Isur Kolo is a thing. Okay. Since we're talking about plowing with an ox and donkey together. So here's another game, by the way. I'm going to punch you. Hamabia Sherp Psulai Mokdoshim. If somebody breeds an ox of Psulai Mokdoshim, so you have, this is an animal that was designated as a korban, but it became possible, and then you redeemed it. So if you were to breed it, even with an animal of its own kind, loika shnayim, you would get malchus. Now loika shnayim, we're saying over here, you would get two malchus. Many of the rishonim take it out and say all it means is you would get one malchus. The Rivon over here understands you'd only get one malchus. Tosfos explains on a different ground that you'd only get one malchus. That's the halacha, is you'd only get one malchus. The Rashash wants to argue maybe you'd get two malchus, one for the fact that you're not allowed to do avodah with it at all, and two for the reason that the Gemara is going to say, but okay, that's not the halacha. The halacha is you just get one. Yeah. Why is that? Yeah. So Omer Rav Yitzchak. So Rav Yitzchak says, in a similar vein, a manahig b'sherp solam al-sashim, if somebody, for example, pulls a wagon or a plow or whatever with this ox of Psulam of Dashim, Loike, then he gets Malchus. Shari Guf Echad, and why does he get Malchus? Because even though this animal is one being, it's one body, Vasoya Kosik Kishne Gufin. The Pasik makes it as if it was two bodies, meaning in the sense that this animal has, to a certain extent, it has the din of Chulin, in that you're allowed to eat it anywhere. On the other hand, to a certain extent, it still has the din of kodshim, namely, you're not allowed to shear it, and you're not allowed to do work with it. So therefore, in that sense, it's like a hybrid animal all within it. It's hybrid. It has a hybrid of chulin and kodshim. So therefore, in that sense, so that's why we said that if you were to breed it or you're to pull an animal with it. So if you breed it with another animal, then it's like kalayim. You're taking this animal, which is itself like two different species, and crossbreeding it with an animal which is one species. And the same thing as far as manig, the same thing, the same problem as you'd have with pulling a wagon, for example, using an ox and a donkey together. The same thing, you'd have a problem with this one animal which is considered like two. Tosfos gives an interesting explanation. Why should it be considered like a hybrid animal? He says because the Rabbi Natan and Tosfos says because when the pasuk says that you're allowed to eat this psulah mukdashim, this animal that was supposed to be a korban and then became possible and you redeemed it. The Torah says you can eat it katsvi b'cha'ayo. You can eat it like a deer or like a gazelle. So what's the point of comparing it to? So the simple meaning means, in other words, you can eat it like chulin, just like a deer or a gazelle can't be karbanos. The same thing, you can eat this like chulin. But the fact that it compares it to two different animals, which are kalayim one with each other, implies that the animal itself is like kalayim. Yeah. Okay. Now we finally get to what's the actual procedure of giving malchus? First of all, kama malchinos? How many malchus is a person given? Arboim chosahas, he gets 39. Shenema, b'mispar arboim. Now the pasuk says like this. You have two psukim back to back that go like this. The pasuk says that if the person is chayav malchus, then they throw him down and they give him malchus, kederish osei b'mispar, according to his rishus, with a number. Then the next pasuk continues, arboim yakenu. They should give him 40 malchus. So the Mishnah is explaining that when it says the mispar aboyim, minyan shows samuch laaboyim. When it says the mis, we darshan as if the mispar from the end of the previous pasuk goes together with aboyim at the beginning of the second pasuk. So it means in the number of 40. The minyan shows samuch laaboyim. It means the number that is adjacent to 40. Or soichem es aboyim, like the Gemara.
They use the word mispar?
Because it says mispar, if it didn't say the mispar, if it just said that they'd give him malchus, and the next possible would begin aboyim yakenu, it would mean literally 40. The mispar aboyim means the number that is adjacent, the number that completes towards 40. In other words, 39. That completes to. In other words, that where the next number after it is going to be 40.
So it's 39. So it's 39. Why didn't
say directly 59? Because the pasuk says so. Actually, the pasuk says 40. But we're going to see in the Gemara. But actually, the pasuk is 40. The pasuk is aboyim yakenu. The fact that the Mishnah is saying 39 because it says the mispar aboyim. The mispar aboyim means the number that is adjacent. So we're going to see in the Gemara. But actually, the Rambam has an interesting shita on it. The Rambam's shita is that midaraisa you are supposed to get 40.
Yeah.
The Rabbanon reduced it to 39 as a gzera, as a siag, in case this way the guy gives him one extra by accident, he shouldn't be over on what the pasuk says not to give him more than 40. So the pasuk clearly says he's not allowed to give him more than 40. Arboim yakenu lo yosef. So the Rambam holds that it's actually a takana of the Chachamim to only give him 39. That way, even if you miscount and give him one extra, you won't have been over on that lot.
Because if he gives two extra.
Two extra, then taka, there'll be a problem. But there's only so much you can do. But according to everybody else, that's not what it means. The Mishnah is saying that midaraisa itself, it means it's supposed to be 39. And that's why the pasuk phrases it in that way, the misfar aboyim, to imply the number which is going to reach towards 40, in other words, 39.
Mm-hmm. The pasuk in the Torah is what?
The pasuk finishes off, kederish osed b'mispar, and the next pasuk begins aboyim yaken. So the misfar aboyim means the number that reaches towards 40. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm aboyim shleimus olaika. Rabbi Yehuda says he gets 44 ones. Either Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold of that drasha, or he doesn't hold of what the Rambam is saying, the takana, to reduce it to 39. Beheichen olaika is saying seder. So where does he get the extra one? We're going to see later on. We're going to see later on that there's in the next Mishnah, or two Mishnayos later, actually, the bottom of Chafez on the base, we're going to say that the Malkus are given two-thirds on his back and one-third on his front. So that means the question is, therefore, so according to Rabbi Yehuda, so the question is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you're saying that you give him a 40th one, where does that one go? No, the answer is Ben Ksefa, between his shoulders, yeah, meaning on his upper back. That one goes over there, the other 39. Son,
they did it.
Ain Omnian Makas Ruyas Leishtalish. Now, when they have to evaluate the person, they have to evaluate how many Makas is he going to be able to withstand and still survive it. They only evaluate with a number that's divisible by three. So in other words, let's say, for example, the doctors evaluate him ahead of time and find he could take 20 malchus, and more than that would kill him. They don't give him 20. They don't round it up and give him 21. They give him 18. They round it down to the nearest multiple of 3. Now, Amdul Kabbal Abayim, let's say a case as follows. Suppose that they evaluated that he can get 40, meaning really 39, whatever. The Loikin Mikta. Then he got some of those malchus. They started giving him the malchus. Later on, they realized, they re-evaluated him and realized he's not going to be able to get the full 40. He's going to die sometime during it. Potter, then at that point, he's potter with what he got already. There's different girsois over here. The Rivan spells out that actually he says what we mean over here is not 40, but they evaluated him. Let's say, for example, they evaluated him at 15 or 18 or what have you. And they started giving him malchus and realized, you know what, he's not going to be able to make it through all that. Then he's potter with what he got so far. The Me'iri says he's only potter if he got at least 3. Some of the other Rishonim say maybe even if he only got 1. Okay. On the other hand, Amduhu L'Kabal Shmona Esrei. Let's say on the other hand, that's part of the omen. It's part of the evaluation. It'll depend on his age. It'll depend on his health. Like
70, 80, or whatever.
So then they may say he can only get 3 malchus. Yeah.
They
can't say that?
If you can't, he has to get malchus somehow. So if he can't even get 3, which is the minimum number, then it means they're going to have to wait until he's stronger.
He won't be stronger if he's 80.
Well, then in that case, they won't be able to give him malchus, I guess. Then, fine, okay. He's not going to get his kapara. All right. Now, on the other hand, by the way, the Rivan says, let's say, for example, that, so the Rivan actually spells out that, let's say, for example, they made an evaluation. They evaluated it could get 40, later 39, whatever. Before they even started, they realized, hey, you know what, he's not going to be able to withstand 40, then not. Then it just means, the Rivan spells out later on in the Gemara, what happens is, then we can't say that he's weakened so much within the same day. We have to say, therefore, that the original evaluation was mistaken, and the second one isn't necessarily any more accurate. Better, in that case, we should just wait until he's stronger, until they can reevaluate that he's going to be able to get 39 and actually go through with it. As opposed to, our Mishnah was talking about where he already got some of it. On the other hand, Amdul L'Kabal Shmona Esrei, let's say they gave him, they evaluated the doctors that he's going to be able to get 18, when we shalaka, and then after we got those 18, Amdul Shayachal L'Kabal Aboyim, they see, hey, he's not doing as badly as we thought, he can actually get all 39. Nevertheless, Potter, he's still Potter because he already got what he got.
We don't go up,
we always go down. Exactly. However, again, the Rivan says only if they started giving him malchus already. Or we're going to see in the Gemara also there's a difference whether they reevaluate him on the same day or a different day. We'll get to that.
Okay. A different day they can go up?
My timer. So what's the reason? First of all, why we say that he gets 39, not 40? So like this, if the Pasuk had said 40 in number, then it would mean exactly that. It means exactly 40. But when it says in the Pasuk, the mispar in number, and the next word is aboyim, 40, meaning minyan shows sochem es aboyim. It means the number that concludes to 40, meaning 39, which is 39. One explanation before we should say is like this. You have each time he's going to be saying a number and then hitting. He's going to be saying 1, for example, and then hit, 2, and then hit. So you finally reach. He's done 39. Then he says 40. And at that point, he said 40. You don't have to give the 40th blood. As Soichem as Aboyim, the one that reached before. Amar Rava, so Rava says in this connection, Kamatip Shoi, Shah Inshi, look how foolish certain people are, many people, the Kaimim, the Kaimim, Sefer Torah, like Kaimim, the Kaimim, Gavir Rava. They stand up in honor of a Sefer Torah, but they don't stand up in honor of a great person, meaning a Talmud Chacham. In a way, you can see the Talmud Chacham is more important than the Sefer Torah. Deal of a Sefer Torah, Ksiv Aboyim, look at this. You see in the Sefer Torah, it says 40, but also Rabbanon Batru Chada, and yet the Rabbanon come and explain that it means one less. So you see, the Chachamim, in that sense, are greater than are more important than the Torah, and therefore you should have more Derech Eretz for them.
Without the Torah, they couldn't.
Right, so the Poshim talk about, on the other hand, there's a Gemara in Kedushin that says the other way around, if you have to stand up for a Talmud Chacham, how much more so you have to stand up for the Torah itself. Right, so I mean, they're interdependent. They're interdependent, but yes. Maharsha says over here specifically, these people that we're talking about, that Rava is decrying over here, these are the kind of people who say, for example, as we learned in Sanhedrin, they say, what good did the Rabbanon ever do us? Everything we need to know, we know directly from the Torah. So Rava explains to them, now look at this, like this, that's you would have thought learning from the Torah that you get 40, and we're telling you only get 39, so you should realize what the Chachamim are accomplishing for you.
Good point.
Yeah. Then we said in the Mishnah.
There are such people who say that.
We've learned in the Gemara. We learned in Sanhedrin. That's one definition of an apikoros. And the Gemara mentioned over there an example of the people of the household, Binyamin, the doctor, who used to say that. That what good did the Chachamim do? They never answered for us a dove, and they never permitted for us a raven. And Rava used to point out.
True.
So Rava used to point out to them every time there was a Shaila and Treifus that they would bring him, he'd show them, look at this. You know, you thought this would be Treif, and here it's Kosher, and vice versa. We said in the Mishnah of Yehuda Allah Boim Shlomo, the Holy said in the Mishnah of Yehuda said, you get full 40, and we said that you do the last one, we said you do between his shoulder blades, meaning on his upper back. So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, my time with Rabbi Yehuda, what is Rabbi Yehuda's reason, where he gets that Dafka, you do that one over there? Just because you have a pasuk like this. In Zechariah, the Navi Zechariah is describing, at this part, in this chapter, he's describing how eventually everybody's going to do tshuva, including also the Nevi'ah HaShefer. You're going to have, like this year, in earlier times, you had false Nevi'ah, who claim that they had Nevu'ah from Hashem, when really they didn't. Eventually, such people are going to do tshuva. Now, in those times, now we learned the other day, when we learned the whole concept of Sritta and Gedida, that the one reason that sometimes people would worship their Avodah Zarahs, or try to get pity on themselves from the Avodah Zarahs or whatever by mutilating themselves. So you have such a person, therefore, he's going to have scars on his body from these different things, but he's going to be embarrassed if he doesn't want, he's going to be embarrassed. And what happens is, eventually, he gets Malchus to punish him for his Avodah. So then, the Pasuk says, people ask him, people are going to say to him, if you're not a false Navi anymore, why do you have all these scars, why do you have these scars, these wounds, ben yodecha, between your arms, meaning between your shoulder blades? Doesn't that show that you're one of these priests, or that you're one of these Nevi'ah Sheker who used to mutilate themselves in honor of their geshkes? But Amar, and he answers, Ashehu Kesi, Beit Ma'avai. No, this is that I was hit in the house of those who love me, meaning the Beit Din. They gave me Malchus to punish me for my avodas because they love me and they want me to be spared from kares. So therefore, we see that there's a concept of a blow that goes ben ksefa, between his shoulder blades.
Because
we're going to learn later on. We're going to learn in a later mission. And he gets Malchus, then that saves him.
Interesting.
But besides that, even if it's over, it wasn't Chayav Karis, whatever. The point is that if a person does an Avera, then they're the Malchus. It's a kapara for him, just like Mrs. Basin is.
It's a kapara.
Yes, it's a kapara. Okay, so then we see that I was hit in the house of those who love me, meaning in other words, Rabbi Yehuda says, so there you see from that there has to be a blow of Malchus that is Ben Yodai, between your hands, meaning between your shoulder blades.
My father told me this mentioned to you that when he received lances, Malchus by the Nazis, the 10th one, he used to drop unconscious. And he was praying to so that it should come as quickly as possible.
Mm.
So you can imagine what it means.
I guess so. Well, we're going to see later on in the Gemara. We're also going to talk about in the Gemara tomorrow. Whether you try to make the person who is giving Malchus, do you try to make sure that they should be as strong as possible or not as strong as possible?
What does that mean?
Exactly what it sounds like. Do you want the person who's giving the Malchus to be a person with big muscles, where the blows he gives are going to be as hard as possible, or not necessarily? Well, we'll see that in the Gemara. Okay, Drabbanan, what are the Drabbanan answer to that? They say, of course, you have that pulse, but it doesn't mean that you're, it doesn't mean Malchus. That is talking about, for example, children in school. If the Rebbe in school has reason to hit them, he hits them someplace like that, in a place where it doesn't have much of an effect, where it doesn't hurt them too much. That's based on Abai, but not necessarily that it's talking about Malchus. We said in the Mishnah, we evaluate him based on, we make the Malchus divisible by three. And we said that we had a case where he started getting his Malchus. We realized that he's not going to be able to withstand it. So then we said we stopped there. And we said it's a locker aim. And the Mishnah seems to be implying only if he already started receiving Malchus, only then do we pass through him at that point. Loy locker loy, implying, but if he didn't actually get any Malchus yet, it sounds like we wouldn't. One second. it sounds like we wouldn't reevaluate him. It sounds like we could reevaluate him. We could say that he gets more than he thought. Before he starts receiving. Uraminu, but the problem is, I have a contradiction. And Braisa says, if they evaluated that he can get 40, and then they reevaluated that he's not going to be able to get 40, Potter, then he's Potter. Implying, even if he didn't sound like, even if he didn't get anything yet. On the other hand, Amdurla Kabul Shmoina Esrei, if they evaluated that he could get 18, the Chozer Amdur Shiyachal Kabul Abayim, and then they reevaluated that he can get 40, then also Potter. So what is it? It's all one Braisa. So in other words, the Braisa seems to be saying that there's no difference whether we actually got Malkus at all. Either way, we just go according to the first evaluation. Whereas our Mishnah had said two cases, one where they evaluated him to get full 40, and they started giving him, and they realized he can't get all of that. We said he's Potter. On the other hand, we said if they said he could get 18, and then we re-evaluate him to 40, then he's also Potter, but only in both cases of Laka, only if he actually started getting the Malkus. The Braisa is saying that not. You always go according to the first omen. No, there's no contradiction because one case is talking about where they reevaluated him on the same day. Meaning, the Rivan says, let's say, for example, so in our Mishnah, they said, for example, on the day that he's going to get Malkus, that he can get, let's say, for example, that he can get 18. Then later that same day, before he started getting, they reevaluated that he can get 40, or vice versa. Obviously, their first evaluation wasn't a very good one. It can't be on the same day. You can't have weakened or strengthened that much.
It's possible.
Not within one day. You're not going to have such a dramatic change like that. From one day to the next, fine. But within the same day, not really. So therefore, obviously, they must have made a mistake with the evaluation. So if they said, for example, that he can get 40, and later on, they realize he can't get that much. So, okay, so if he already got some of the Malkus, fine. He already got his bizoyan. The main purpose of Malkus is to be mavazed him, the nikla chichalei necha, that he should be degraded in your eyes, as the pasuk says. So now that he was degraded, that by getting some Malkus, then that's good enough already. As opposed to, had he not gotten Malkus yet, then it amounts to as if there was no evaluation at all. So now what we're going to do is, okay, so we wait until he's healthier, and then we'll give him, and then we'll make a proper evaluation. We said 14, and now all of a sudden we have to go 40, and now we have to go down to 18. Obviously, it was a no good evaluation. Obviously, we don't know what his situation is. Better, we should wait until we can reevaluate him properly, as opposed to if he already got, then fine. And vice versa. If they reevaluated him for 18, and then on the same day they say he should really get 40, obviously the first evaluation must have been a mistake. So if he didn't get Malkus yet, then they can reevaluate him at 40 and give him 40 because the 18 doesn't count for anything. If he already got Malkus, fine. He already got his desire. That would be the case when that's the case of the Mishnah. Therefore, that says that only if he started getting the Malkus, only then do we stop there. But if he didn't get the Malkus yet, then the first evaluation doesn't count for anything. Ha, Jamdul, ha, as opposed to the case of the Braisa, Jamdul, Mocher, the Yoma Achra, is where they reevaluate it the next day or another day. So then it could very well be that he strengthened or weakened from one day to the next. So therefore, let's say, for example, that they evaluated him that, let's say, 2 days from now he can get 40. Then when it comes 2 days later, they see actually he's not able to get anything, or he's not able to get as much. Okay, the first evaluation was a valid evaluation because at the time he was presumably healthy enough to get all 40 or 39. And now he can't get it, then he's Potter. Actually, a day or two later, whatever.
The scene can change.
Yeah, a day or two later, not on the same day. And actually, the Rivan uses an interesting expression over here, Sharinis Baza Ba'itza Omen, that just the evaluation in itself was enough to be a bazillion for him, which makes it sound like actually then in that case he'd be positive completely, because he already had to go through that bazillion. Vice versa, if they said that in 2 days from now, let's say he can get 18, then on that day they say he can actually get 40, fine, then you only give him the 18, because obviously at the time when they evaluated him, that was a valid evaluation. They said 18. By now he's strengthened, by now he can take 40, so it doesn't matter, still give him only 18. The Rivan gives another explanation over here that we're talking about over here that if they evaluated in a day that they said for example that he can get some of it now and some of it later on. The Rivan says I don't like that explanation. We're talking about that they did an evaluation now and they did an evaluation later on. We're not talking about that they did some now and some later or whatever.
So he wouldn't. Now you have to have everything mapped, basically.
Well, the thing is, if they evaluate him now, then we say the first evaluation. If they reevaluate him later in the day, that only the first evaluation we have to throw out, and obviously it was no good.
Right.
So we'll have to go according to the second one, as opposed to if we evaluate him now, and again 2 days later, then we can say the first one was valid.
Okay.
Mishnah says,
over aveda sheyesh ba shnei lavim. Suppose now a person did an aveda that involves two lavim. For example, the case we had before, where there were eight, for example, amdu oimed echad. So now, if they gave him one evaluation for the two of them together, loike upotter, then he gets whatever they evaluated him, and he's potter. The imlav, and if not, loike, he gets whatever malchus he can from the first one, or misrape, and then he gets healed, because of a loike, and then he gets malchus again for the second one. What would be a scenario, by the way, would be, let's say, for example, that. So one example why you wouldn't give it to him all at once is, let's say, for example, so we're going to see in the Gemara an example, but practically speaking, you could also have, let's say, for example, Adam came and testified about him that he did about one Aveda, and then later on, the same Adam or other Adam came and said, you know, by the way, there was another Aveda involved in after he received the first one. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, well, Tanya, don't we learn in a Braisa, Ein Oimdin Oimed Echad L'Shnei Lavin, we don't do one evaluation for two Lavin, each one has to be evaluated separately.
But that's when they come at the same time.
No, but the question, the mission is not specifying.
Right.
One scenario is, for example, so okay, he did two averis for the chayav malchus. The maximum he could be getting is 78. Now you can have two scenarios. One is, for example, where they evaluated him, the maximum he can get without being killed is 41. Well, 41 doesn't divide by 3. You have to round it down to 39. 39 is all the malchus you get for one of those averis. So it would mean he'll have gotten malchus for one of them and nothing for the other. Therefore, we say that's the case where the Mishnah said that he gets the 39 malchus. We wait till he heals, and then we give him the 39 or whatever he can take for the other one. As opposed to Hadam Dula Boim Vatauti, if they evaluated him for the maximum he can get and still stay alive, it's 42, that's fine. 39 will count for one, 3 will count for the other, and that's good enough. So that's when we could have that he just gets the 42 malchus, and then that's it. He's potter from the remainder. Mishnah says, Ketzav Malkin, how do they actually do the Malkus? Kofis Shtei Yadav Ala Omud Helach Behelach. They tie his two hands to a block of wood, that one on each side. So the Rivan describes, you have this, the point is like this. We're going to see, we're going to see later on, the Pasuk says like this. The Pasuk describes, how is Malkus done? The Hipiloi HaShofet. It says the Shofet should throw him down. So it doesn't mean he's lying flat on the ground, especially because we're going to say later in the Mishnah that some of the malchus have to go onto his front. By the way, when you were asking what it means to do on his front, it doesn't mean you stand in front of him and do it. What you do is actually the strap is long enough to wrap around his back, or to wrap it. There's two different opinions actually. Is it that they do across the width of his back? So therefore, when you have it long enough to go around to his stomach. Or is it that you do it along the length of his back and it's long enough to go over?
But it's not in front. It's not facing
him. It's not actually facing him. No, the Chazan Akhnef stands behind him. But anyway, the point is, it has to be the pillow. It doesn't mean you lay him down on the ground. It doesn't mean, on the other hand, he's not standing straight up. He has to be kind of bent over. So therefore, we have this pillar that Yvonne described that's maybe an armor and a half or 2 amas tall. We bend him over. So he's standing like this, kind of. And we tie his two hands to the two sides. No, it's like a pole, it's like a pillar. He stands like this with his two hands tied to the two sides of the pillar, and that way he's standing but not standing. He's like leaning over. Then the Chazan HaKnesses, which means the shamash over there, the one who's actually going to be giving the malchus, grabs a hold of his clothes. And the reason for that is that he has to tear his clothes off because the malchus has to be given on his bare skin. But also, the vote is that you have to have this whole thing of the nikla, that he gets degraded, then the malchus has to be a degrading thing, and therefore that involves also tearing off his clothes. So they tear it, so they say grab the hold of his clothes.
Afterwards.
Maybe, I don't know. Okay, so they grab the hold of his clothes and start tearing them off. Imnikru unikru. If they tear, they tear. It doesn't matter. The imnifrumu nifrumu. And if they get tattered, they get tattered. There's different explanations of what kriya and prima is. It means vertical and horizontal. It means along the seams and not along the seams. Different explanations. Whatever. Anyway, adshrum galas libo, until he uncovers the guy's heart. And here also, there's a few different explanations. Does it mean, for example, that he's pulled his clothes upward so that his lower back and so his lower back and stomach are exposed? But that would be according to the opinion that you do the Malchus with flies, so then you don't need his upper back to be uncovered. Or does it mean that until his whole front and back is exposed because you need the Malchus to go over his shoulders to his stomach?
Probably
okay.
Both.
Whatever. Nice. It could be either way. But Evan Nesunamach, then you have a stone behind the guy. The guy is standing over there with his hands tied, bent over the pole. There's a stone behind him for the Chazon HaKnesset to stand on, because that way, when he stands on that, the blows will be harder. Because it's from a height. Urtsu b'yodishol egel, he has in his hand a strap made from calf skin. Kfula echad l'shnayim or shnayim l'aba, it's folded one strap into two and two into four. So in other words, the Rivan explains what it is. You have one strap, which is folded into two, and then you have another strap, also folded into two, so you have a total of four thicknesses.
Of skin,
yeah. Ushtei retzuas shochamur erlis v'yodisla, and you also have two strips of leather from a donkey. We'll see in the Gemara later on why you adapt a calf skin and donkey. They're dead. No, kalayim only applies when the animals are alive. So you have two strips of donkey skin, erlis v'yodisla, that go up and down in it, that are kind of like woven in and out of it.
They're woven.
There's different explanations exactly what it means. The Rivan explains two explanations. One is that it means that these pieces of donkey skin are attached on the ends of the calf skin, so that when you're hitting them, they go up and down like they sort of like a cat of nine tails in that sense. Mm-hmm. Or the second explanation is they're woven in and out. Like so you have the surface of the strap is the flat surface is calf skin, and then you have woven in and out of it, you have donkey skin. Again, why calf and donkey? We'll see in the Gemara. Yoda tefach, the handle of the strap is a tefach wide, so it fits his hand. V'rochba tefach, the width of the strap is also a tefach. V'rosh ha'magaf ha'pikrei, so the end of it is long enough to reach his stomach. So again, you have the two different explanations. The Rivan understands that means that you're ripping him across the width of his back. So therefore, you have some of them on his back, and some of them go around to his front, going around one side of him. The other explanation,
like this.
Yes. So he's standing over here. Yes. So one way of looking at it is you hit him across the width of his back, and the other.
Like this.
Yes. The other way of looking at it, which I think is the Rambam, is that you do it across the length of his back, and then therefore the straps have to be long enough to be able to reach over his shoulders and down to his stomach. Yeah.
But you don't hit him in front.
You do no, you don't actually stand in front of him. No, that not. The Enamaka is the omen of the Yoshev. You don't give the guy Malchus when he's standing or sitting, Elam Musa, Davka leaning over, like we said. Shenema, the Pilei HaShofet, as the Pasuk says, the judge should throw him down. Throw him down and flies like that. He's leaning down. The one who's hitting, the Chazon HaKnesset, hits him with one hand with all of his strength. In other words, he doesn't hold the strap with both hands in a bit, because it's hard to coordinate both your hands together. Instead, he uses one hand, so he'll get the maximum. Then you have something right there reading the script. The Rivan explains, the Gemara tells us in Christus, based on a process, that when you're giving Malchus, there has to be sukkah instead. So the Mishnah is taking it as a given that there are sukkah instead. Everybody knows that. What are the sukkah that are said? As follows. You have a process from the Sefer, two sukkah. In Moy Fishma Lachas Adema, if you're not careful to do the Mishnah, if people are Hashem at Makos Chavet Nachas Adema, then Hashem will say out explicitly, or will make
amazing your Makos and the Makos of your descendants. So that's one pasuk. The choizel l'tchilas hamikra. Then he starts over again, and it continues with other pasukim. Shmartim as divrei abrisa tzedemer. You should keep the words of this bris to do them, and the choizem. And he finishes off.
V'chozer l'tchilas hamikra, and then he starts over again as necessary. In other words, if by the time he said these words of the psukim, the malchus are not finished yet, then you start saying over. You start saying over the words of these psukim.
You mean one pasuk every time he hits, or
no? So there's different explanations. Actually, the Marsha points out. Marsha points out that the last three psukim that we quoted, the Hifla Hashemas Makoscha and Rishmartim as Divrei Abrus Hazor, said Behurachum, each one has 13 words. So therefore, that could correspond to 39 malchus. But it doesn't necessarily have to be like they say it word by word with each blow. It could be they're saying it could be he's saying it at his speed and the guy's hitting at his speed. And therefore, so if they finish, then they start over again.
That's what we have. I mean,
this is where we get the minhag of saying Behurachum by malchus and Erev Yom Kippur. And actually, Rishonim point out this is also where we get the minhag of saying Behurachum at the beginning of Ma'ariv. Because when would they usually give malchus? Between Mincha and Ma'ariv. Therefore, we say Behurachum at the beginning of Ma'ariv to represent that.
Why
would they do it that late in the day?
Right.
I don't know. Maybe to give the guy as much of a chance as possible to get his strength together during the day. I don't know. Whatever. So that's how it was. Yeah. So yeah, Maharsha talks about it in some detail over here that the pasuk in Lois Tishmer Lasos doesn't have enough words, so therefore you would start again with that pasuk and then you'd continue with the other pasukim, whatever. Okay. Now, what happens if the guy dies when he's being given the malchus? After all, the evaluation might have been off. Pasuk, then the chazan HaKnesses is pasuk, and he did what he was supposed to do.
However,
if he added even one extra blow, and then the guy died, how does it go? Lal Yodet, because that says he's going to have to go into Golos because he killed the Shogun. Niskalko ben Beri ben Bamayim. Now, what happens while the guy is getting malchus? If he gets degraded he loses control of his bowels, whether Beri, whether excrement, ben Bamayim, or whether urine, potter. Then at that point, he's potter because he already had his bezoyim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ish Beri Va Ish Bamayim. Rabbi Yehuda says it depends. For a man, it has to be excrement. Only that would be enough to be a bezoyim for him. For a woman who's more sensitive, for her, even that she urinates is enough to pass to her. So let's start the Gemara a little bit. My timer. So what's the reason? Mishum Nikla. My timer. So first of all, actually, Agoris Abach takes out these four words. My timer. Mishum Nikla. Different Mefarshim talk about different possibilities. First of all, if we have it in at all, it might be referring to what we said in the Mishnah that they tear off his clothes. It might be referring to what we said at the end of the Mishnah about that if he loses control of his bowels and he's potter.
Nikla means what?
Nikla means, the pasuk says, v'nikla achicha la'enecha, that your brother should be degraded before your eyes. So in context, what the pasuk is saying, you shouldn't hit him more than 40 because then v'nikla achicha la'enecha. But we also understand it to mean that the purpose of the malchus is v'nikla achicha la'enecha, is bizarre. So therefore, according to the different explanations, either it means we tear off his clothes, that's part of the nikla process, or that if he loses control of his bodily function, then the nikla has been accomplished. Amar of Sheshes Mishrim Rav Lozman Azaria, Minayim L'Ratzur Sheshal Ezel, how do we know the strap for malchus is supposed to be made out of calf skin? Dichtiv, because the pasuk is not boring yakken, or the pasuk says he should be giving 40 malchus, the Samech Le, and the next pasuk continues, L'Saksim Sher B'Dishai, don't muzzle the ox while it's threshing.
Right.
Now, we learned before from that it means that the L'Saksim Sher B'Dishai is the prototype of what kind of loises that gets malchus.
Right.
But we also darshin the fact that it puts malchus next to an ox teaches us that you use skin from an ox or from a calf for malchus.
Uh-huh.
So you don't need ox skin because that would be harder than necessary, but a calf at least, the Gemara points out in Bava Kama that even a newborn calf can also be called a shur, a ketzav is ki yivaled. Therefore, if you use skin from a calf, which is easier on the guy, then it also fits what the pasuk is saying, shur
vidishin. Right? Not anything else.
Yeah, what else would you use? You're not going to use the actual...
You could use gideon, you could...
No. I mean, the skin, the fascist is what you use for whipping. The Amr of Sheshis, Shomer Belozman Azariah, also of Sheshis says another thing in the name of Belozman Azariah, another thing that we can learn from juxtaposition of Sukkim in this connection. Minayim Yuvama Shinafla Lukne Mukashchin. How do we know that if a Yuvama falls to a Mukashchin? So her husband died. Let's say her husband's only surviving brother, or the eldest brother, whatever, is a mukeshchin, is somebody who suffers from boils or leprosy or whatever. So she doesn't want to marry him because she's disgusted by it. How do we know she ain't chos minosa? How do we know that we don't muzzle her? We don't tell her, in other words, tough luck, you have to do it anyway.
Instead, we haven't given her chalitza.
Right.
How do we know such a thing? Dichtiv le'sachsim shorbedishay, because you have the pasuk le'sachsim shorbedishay. The samach leki yesh rachim yachsav. And the next thing the pasuk says is that when brothers live together and one of them dies and you do yivum, so we learn from the juxtaposition that you shouldn't muzzle her complaint about that I can't be with this brother. Don't muzzle it when there's ki yesh rachim yachsav, when there has to be yivum. Say that chalitza is going to be done. Then Rav Sheshes says, in the name of Rav Lozman Azayah, another thing that we learn from juxtaposition of Sukkim, call mevaze as a moyadim. Anybody who's mevaze the moyadim, meaning the Rivan says chalamoyad, a person works on chalamoyad when they're not supposed to. Pila oivid avodah zarah. It's as if you worship avodah zarah. Yichtiv alekei masecha leisasalach, because the pasuk says you should not make for yourself cast gods, cast idols. Keep the Yom Tov of Pesach. So we see if a person is not careful about keeping the Yom Tov, then it's as if he's worshipping Avodah Zarah.
Because it says
next to each other. Here's another one. Anybody who speaks Lashon Hara, or anybody who accepts Lashon Hara that somebody else said.
In other words, you don't tell them to stop.
Anyone who testifies falsely, all those people, Roy Lashlich of the club, all those people deserve to be thrown to the dogs. Dichtiv, as the passage says, so it says about today for me, you should throw it to the dogs. The summer and the next question here is Lois Tisa, Shema Shav, don't carry a false report, which includes saying Lashon Hara and saying Eidus Sheker, Kori Beinami, Lo Sassi, and you can also read the word, not Lo Sisa, you shouldn't carry it, but Lo Sassi, you shouldn't cause it to be carried, meaning that you're Makabal, that you accept it from the other person. So all those are various forms of Lashon Hara, and all of those is Lakelos HaShlichu Noise, they all deserve to be thrown to the dogs. I saw a vote on it once. Why Dafka?
Because
it took them all together. I saw a vote on it. What the deeper idea behind it is, the dogs didn't bark when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, so they knew how to control their tongues. For a number of reasons. First of all, you have a lot of excitement going on. You have people screaming that the Mitzrayim screaming about their dead, etc. Also, the Gemara tells us in Bava Kamma that when the Malach HaMavis comes to the city, the dogs make noises, and here the Malach HaMavis was there. So for all those reasons, you would have expected the dogs to bark. So, and yet they didn't. So they knew how to hold their tongue. Whereas the Baal Lashon Hara doesn't know how to hold his tongue, and therefore, in that sense, he's worse than the dogs. Okay. Then we said a shteiritzus v'chola. We said there were two straps of donkey skin that were attached to, woven into the calf skin.
Right.
Tana shalchamur. So now our Mishnah had said shalchamur, but actually it seems the original Mishnah just said shteiritzus, two straps, and the Gemara is adding from a brisa shalchamur. So later on, somebody mistakenly added it to the Mishnah. Okay.
Really, the Mishnah doesn't.
The original Mishnah didn't say shalchamur. Okay. Why shalchamur? K'didor shahu gvilah leidir of chista. Like a person from the Galil one time said the following drasha in front of Rav Chista. Pasuk says in Yeshaya, it's in that Torah of Shabbos Chazon, Yoda Shor Kenehu, the ox knows its master, the Chamur Evers Balav, the donkey knows the stall or the trough or whatever of its master. Yisrael La Yoda, where's the trough, like what it eats out of. Yisrael La Yoda, where the Jewish people don't know. Meaning, Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah. Yovei Mishamakir Eris Ba'olav. So let the two animals that recognize the trough of their master, we're saying over here, a Shur and a Hamur, let them come, be a Parah, and let them be used to pay back Mishamakir Eris Ba'olav. The one who doesn't recognize the trough of his master, meaning a person who violates what the Eresha says, deserves to be punished through a Shur and a Hamur, which do recognize their master and listen to him. We said yoda tefach. We said the handle of the strap was a tefach wide, and we said the length of it has to reach until the middle of his stomach, so the middle of the guy's stomach. So Omar Abaye Shmamina Kol Chab B'Chab from Gabe Avdinim. So Abaye says evidently what that means is for each person who gets malchus, we have to make him a custom sized strap. So Rava says, "In nafish l'uratzuas tuba." In that case, you're going to have an awful lot of straps. And the Mishnah had said only that you have the one strap with the two pieces attached to it. So what do you mean?
You have many.
For each person who gets malchus, you have to have a different size one.
Elo, I'm a Rava Avkase. It's like, no, Rava says what it is they made a loop in the strap. Kiboy miktave, when you need to, you would tie it more tightly. If the guy is small, if the guy is large, for example, then you'd tie it more tightly. Kiboy merakaban, when you needed to, you would loosen it. If the guy is smaller, so this way always you would always measure, you'd always address the loop as necessary.
In closed loop, in other words.
No, in other words, the loop could be open or closed as much as necessary in order to give slack, in order to make it the right length, exactly.
That was more
pashas
to put a loop.
No, the loop wasn't necessarily what would hit the guy. The loop is pashas closer to the handle that the Chazan HaKnesses was holding.
Ah, I see.
But the point is it could be
the other end was loose.
The other end was loose, yeah. Then we said Malkinos. So hold on, we said that we give a Malkus two thirds on his back and one third on his front. Menahani Mili, how do we know that? Amar of Kahana, the Amar Kro, because the Pasuk says, the Pili Ashefet, the Kol upon of Kadevish, after the Misper. The Pasuk says that the Shefet should throw him down and hit him in front of him, Kadevish, after, according to his wickedness, the Misper, according to the number, implying Risha Achas Melafonov, implying there's one amount of wickedness in front of him, Shkevish, or Ismachrav, and two amounts of wickedness behind him. So therefore we see that's one. Because once you have one in front, then evidently it means there's more behind. Lefonov, if you're saying that he does one risha in front of him, then it implies that there's other rishayas that are done behind him. So one and two.
The kihul lefanav. You hit it,
but only lefanav is only kadevish also, only according to his wickedness. So one idea is, why do we have 39 malchus anyway,
right,
and we're dividing them into groups of 13?
Right.
Because there are 13 midas harachamim, and this guy violated that, and this guy is taking the evishtas harachamim away from himself. So therefore, For violating one set of it is Lafana, because in front of him. For two more times, it has to be in back of him, because we know the total has to be 39.
It doesn't say also the back.
Because it doesn't have to. Once it says that he got 39 malchus, and it says that one group of them is Lafana, then we understand it means the other two are behind him. Okay, I guess we'll continue tomorrow, Rav Hashem.